Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream loud today. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My power's turned up. Starting right now, I'll be gone. I'll play my fight.
This is Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, it's sunny and chair outside, but it's cold. But I understand it's going to be up to like 50 degrees after it just snowed yesterday. But I'm here in New York City, and I'm inside my house. Well, today we have pianist Daniel Wanukowski. Yes, that's what I'm looking at. Well, he's going to be performing music by a man named Carol Rathouse at Queens College, and it's part of the City University of New York. As a matter of fact, we joked around. When I went to Queens College, we thought it was the music wing was called Rathus because it's spelled R-A-T-H-A-U-S, and we joked around calling it Rat House. And as it turns out, that's the pronunciation. So he will be performing there. Daniel is a Polish-Canadian pianist whose, it says here, insightful interpretations of the classics are complemented by projects that shed light on overlooked corners of the repertoire, particularly those that connect with his Polish and Jewish cultural heritage. So we're waiting for him to call. And, of course, we have to have a message from one of our sponsors.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calibo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these absolutely wonderfully delicious brownies at www.brownies.com, and they also have the soft batch cookies, particularly the chocolate mint, that are really much better than the Girl Scout wort. I like them especially they're a lot fresher. Well, I don't want to even go into it. That's really worth it, but anyhow. So, let's see what's going on. I'm going to some events this weekend. Oh, wait a minute. I think I see... Oh, no. The rubber chickens are coming in. Okay, okay, okay. All right. Well, it's, don't worry about it. He's on now. Now I don't have to. Okay. So, hello, Daniel.
Yes. Hello, Merle. Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. Good. Just after breakfast. Everything's good. Second coffee.
Oh, great. Well, tell us about yourself. Let's do that first.
Sure. Well, I was born in Canada and have lived out of Canada now for over 20 years. So I guess one leg of me is still Canadian and the other is kind of international. And it's a pleasure to be back in Queens. I actually have a little bit of a connection with Queens because when I studied with Leon Fleischer in Baltimore at the Peabody Conservatory, I used to always travel up to Astoria and stay here and then take a train to Manhattan and work with Leonid Hambro, who was a huge influence on my life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what has gotten your connection with and by the way, I know you probably missed when I was introducing. I'm a Queens College alumni, and we actually joked about the name because we always thought it was really Raffus, and we joked around calling it Rat House, and now we get to find out it's really Rat House, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah.
Yeah.
I get that quite a bit because Rathaus is, of course, the town hall in German. So sometimes when I mention I'm performing the music of Karl Rathaus in Germany, you know, they say, well which city?
What got you into performing his music? I mean, in terms of, like, what's your connection with Queens College?
It would be a long story, and I really have to cut it short. I've been living in Vienna now for about 5 years. I met my wife there, and there is a wonderful museum that opened there about 3 years ago that is dedicated to recovering voices that were silenced by the Nazi regime. And I actually worked with a producer from Decca, Michael Haas. We worked on a CD together, and he introduced me to an extremely interesting person, an Austrian Holocaust survivor. His name was Walter Arlen, and he's still around, the age of 98, lives in Los Angeles today, and he kind of got me hooked. He invited me to record his solo piano CDs. Four CDs of music, all solo piano music and some chamber music. And meeting with him, learning about his life, his story of escape, a harrowing journey through London, and eventually ending up in Chicago where he worked as a furrier and continued his music lessons, kind of composing on the side. Eventually, he would become a music critic in Los Angeles for the Los Angeles Times. And he kind of kept his compositional activities in silence. This is what fascinates me. It was literally only about 10 years ago he showed the world, look, I'm actually a composer. And I find there's in many of these Holocaust survivors, there's some kind of element of continuing to stay silenced. And I believe it's essential to keep their stories alive and to keep their music performing and their stories of survival, in addition to the wonderful music they left us.
And so I understand now from what I'm reading here, you're going to be performing both concerts that have to do with Karl Rathaus, as well as other compositions.
No, This so-called festival is purely dedicated to Carl Rathaus. So the bulk of the material is Carl Rathaus, and the kind of culmination with Leon Botstein and the wonderful Tone Orchestra, the Orchestra Now, it will be only Carl Rathaus, including his Second Symphony and the Piano Concerto, two monumental works.
Are you going to be doing this at Lefrak or Colden Center?
Lefrak, yeah, that's a Sunday matinee, 3 p.m.,
okay.
I believe.
Will this be the first time that you're doing anything at Lefrak?
Yeah, that's Sunday. That's the Piano Concerto and the Second Symphony by Carl.
Oh, but is this the first time that you'll be performing at that venue?
Yeah. For me, it'll be a debut as well.
Oh, okay.
And also tonight,
have you had a chance
at the Center for? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just want to know if you've had a chance to, like, rehearse there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had our first rehearsal last night. It was that was at Bard College, their home base. And, we ran through the concerto twice. The orchestra did a fantastic job second time around, really picking things up. It's a big work. It has an unsettling, dissonant quality to it. It's really relentless. And it's rather dark, morose in its overall kind of atmosphere, and very dense contrapuntal, stemming from that interwar Second Viennese School, even pre-Second Viennese School tradition of Franz Schrecker and Richard Strauss. Glorious orchestration.
Have you noticed the wonderful acoustics at the Lefrak?
I sure did. Oh, it was a pleasure. Absolute pleasure to play.
Isn't it?
And the Steinway is also brand new. I was apparently the second serious pianist to perform on it. So we had a truly luxurious session yesterday night, and we're repeating this morning.
And this is on Sunday afternoon, correct? Is that
Sunday afternoon? Right. But there's also a chamber music session tonight, a concert that includes a round table discussion, and that's at the Center of Jewish History in right downtown Manhattan, West 16th Street. So that starts at 7:30 p.m. and I'm performing I'm actually starting the concert with a work that was considered lost by Carl Rathaus for many years. It is his second piano sonata. We've had the manuscript for the first, the third, and the fourth sonata he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But the second was lost for decades. And we knew it was around because numerous researchers mentioned it in their books. But it turns out it was right at home at Queens. And somebody had simply misfiled it in the library. And when they were looking for the Second Symphony, the manuscript for the Second Symphony, they found the second sonata lying nice snug right under it, completely misfiled. So I'm very excited to bring that out to the public. And I also recorded it. And we'll have a CD, the first CD of solo piano music coming out on March 15th.
Oh, that's great. I'll have to get a copy of it. And for
absolutely.
Those people,
I can send you one.
Oh, great. For those people, by the way, who are not as musically inclined,
yeah.
What is a sonata?
Oh, a sonata is simply a type of musical form that has been around for centuries. It started very simple back in the late Baroque with composers like Domenico Scarlatti, where it was simply a way to introduce two contrasting themes. So you have one theme that's jolly, cheerful, and then you have a contrasting theme that comes in an entirely different character. And over time, in the classical era, with Beethoven and Mozart and Haydn, the sonata form evolved into a greater musical structure, where the two themes would now have a development, and the composer would have a chance to kind of show off his musical skills and develop those themes in myriad ways.
Do you have...
By the time we got to the early 20th century, the form became more liberal. So now instead of two themes, you could have three, or even a kind of mosaic of ideas and motives. And that's kind of what we get with Karl Rathaus.
Okay. I go back to being at Queen's College. I was like in 1965. Would I have even known that Rathaus even had any compositions? Or these just came out of the woodwork?
You know, they're coming out of the woodwork. When Karl Rathaus received a professorship to study composition at Queen's College, he never really wrote another monumental work on the order of the piano concerto or second symphony. And he wrote some more utilitarian kind of works, study pieces. And I know he left a wonderful legacy as a composition professor. A name immediately comes to mind, Gabriel Fontrier. And numerous composition students have been inspired by his teaching. And he was apparently, he was an incredible pianist as well. And he could take something like a Chopin study, and there's a wonderful anecdote of him performing a Chopin etude, a study piece, for one of his students, and he could literally play it in every single key. And one time you have keys C major, D major, E major, F major. Some of these are very difficult, like when they get into many sharps or flats. And he played a Chopin etude for a student, and then asked the student, oh, was that in the right key? So he had incredible versatility as a composer. And he shined as a film composer, as a symphonic composer, he wrote a ballet. So also in theater, he had great success. And coming, when I entered the foyer yesterday at Queen's College, there's a beautiful painting there of him, which I think reminds us of the legacy that he left that university.
Wow. Do you, like yourself, is there a favorite composition that you like to play, you know, when someone said play one of your favorite compositions. Is there something that you love strongly?
Yeah, you're talking just about Karl Rathaus's works or more broad?
No, any of them.
Just anything. Oh, okay. That's a tricky question. I really love to do programs that explore everything from early Baroque to modern living composers. And there have been moments where I've met with living composers and have them guide me through the music. Like I had the privilege of working with Walter Arlen, the Austrian survivor, that he came to all our recording sessions. And I guess really as a solo pianist, it comes down to moments. I can't say there's a favorite piece of music, but there are moments that can really put goosebumps during a concert, and those moments are worth living for. It's like I remember one piece we were recording, And Walter Arlen had a certain tempo marking, which tells us how fast to play a certain piece of music. And the tempo marking was just unbelievably slow, I think 52 to a quarter. And I was just dying with this piece because I could barely get through the first phrase, and it just seemed so slow and dreary and so horrific. And Walter Arlen immediately got up. He shot up, ran to the piano. He said, "What are you doing? You know, that's completely the wrong character. This is supposed to be like a wreath, a memorial wreath. You know, it's wavering, it's flowing, it's symbolic." And he said, "You know, play it four times faster," and immediately it came to life. So often when we have the privilege of working with a living composer, we can find mistakes that have been perhaps passed down to an editor. You know, when it got to the publishing house, sometimes digits get wrong, and so those moments are just beautiful.
That's really great. After this, are you on tour or anything?
Yeah. Right after this, I'm off to LA, and I just finished actually a segment in Canada where I did the Gershwin Piano Concerto in F, a complete opposite to what we're going to hear on Sunday with Gershwin. You know, coming from a family of Russian emigres, his style of embedding jazz into classical forms, you know, again, the concerto in F being a sonata form, the optimism of that work and the pessimism of Karl Rathaus are really like two polar opposites. It's a fascinating journey for me to play kind of two concerti of entirely different character. And next week I'm off to LA performing at the LA Museum of the Holocaust and doing something again completely different. I'm pairing the mazurkas of Karl Rathaus with the mazurkas of Frederic Chopin.
Wow. Now just for our audience, what is a mazurka?
Yeah. A mazurka is, you know, there used to even be an American form back in the late 19th century. It originated somewhere in Louisiana. It was called a mazurka. And it's a purely Polish dance. All its origins come from one specific region in Poland called the Mazowsze region. And it's a simple dance, a country-style folk dance in 3-4 time, so three beats to every bar, and it has a very distinctive rhythmic pattern to it, which is entirely different than the more famous waltz that we all know, which is um-pa-pa, 1-2-3. The mazurka is quicker and has a kind of fast 1-2, 1-2, 1-2 with an occasional accent on the second or third beat. It's a very lively dance.
Isn't there a
more
famous mazurka?
Well, the Polish national anthem is a mazurka in theory, because it's in 3-4 time and everybody considers it a mazurka, but it would actually be a little too fast for a traditional mazurka. So, yeah.
Well, because I seem to remember that there's one that's, you know, like a lot of times, like classical music has become what I call popular music because you've heard certain songs so many times. It's like you can recognize Beethoven's
mm-hmm.
Fifth. You know, things like that. But
that's
why I was trying to remember. There was something with a mazurka that I seemed to like. Okay.
Very possible. Yeah.
I'll look it up.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, I was thinking, not Hungarian. Maybe it was, okay, I'll look it up. I'll figure it out.
Well, you have my appetite wet. I'll definitely be looking it up the rest of the day.
You know, it's one of these things I have to, I wasn't a music major, but I have always been a musician. So, and because of that, you know, like in, I grew up like learning classical music because that's what you play it on the piano in order to learn music. You know, then at one point I broke away and said, no, I want to build stuff instead. You know, that's, but, you know, so I'm, you know, I remember the piano books, the sonata book and the sonatina book and the, you know, things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
in North American upbringing, we have a big focus on German music. So, also, you know, the Italian influence, like Clementi sonatas and sonatinas, and but the German is kind of the core of our upbringing. Whereas in Eastern Europe, for example, they were brought up on a lot of Russian and Polish music, like Bortkiewicz and Szymanowski would be too difficult, but you know, even Shostakovich. And it ends up with a different kind of flavor throughout, where I find North American audiences respond very well to a Beethoven sonata. It's like they'll get it more. Whereas in Eastern Europe, you know, there has to be Chopin or some 19th century composer in the program. So there's a little nuance I've picked up on my tours. And in Austria, I don't dare to play Chopin. I have to bring in Schumann because it's a cultural factor. The Schumann will resonate with the public, but the Chopin won't.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder why.
Yeah,
I guess it's
cultural upbringings and what people are used to. I'm also finding language is a big factor. The actual didactics, you know, the structure of a language, pronunciation, and even semiotics, what's between the syllables has a big factor in how we appreciate music. So we take somebody like Karl Rathaus, and he grew up speaking Polish, but at such a turbulent time in history where Poland had just been liberated after World War I and once again stood alone as a country. But the area he was born in, Ternopil, now belongs to the Ukraine because, again, Poland was taken under the Soviet Empire after World War II. So he got the bulk of his training in Vienna, in Austria, and then moved with Franz Schrecker, who his dear teacher, up to Berlin, where he felt most at home. So he really picked up, and one hears in Karl Rathaus' mazurkas, for example, a very heavy German influence. So it's hard to classify him, and then he came to America, via Paris, London, where he stayed for a couple of years, and lived here and wrote in a completely different style. So, what is he? That's the problem. What is he? A Polish composer? Is he a German Austrian composer? Is he American? Really, none of these categories fit, which is very problematic for musicologists today.
I just had this tune just hit my head. Maybe this is it, or maybe it's completely different. I'll try to sing it. Okay. It's like it, you know, playing on the piano and singing it are two different things. Da 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 da
That's the Turkish march. That's Mozart.
That's not a mazurka, then, is it?
No. That's
okay. And that's not the one.
I believe that's in 2. That's in 2/4 time. Yeah. 2/4 time. Yeah, and that's actually part of one of his piano sonatas. Again, like you mentioned, one of those pieces that really hit the popular mainstream.
Yeah, that's it did, because that's why, you know, I remember that. Well, I probably remember too many of these things.
Well, I think by the time you entered Queens College, Karl Rathaus had died in 1954. So things would have kind of silenced, and he lived a very quiet life here. I come from a family of Holocaust survivors myself, and my grandfather didn't open up about the war until he was well into his 90s. So there's always that factor of practicing silence.
Yeah, that's interesting because when I go back to my grandparents, I had two that came from Russia, and this was before World War One that they came. So two came from Russia, one came from Poland, and one came from Austria. But from what I got, none of them ever spoke the language of the country they came from. They either spoke English or Yiddish.
Right.
And now I'm going to be doing an article called "You're Not Too Old to Learn Yiddish." So I'm going to attempt.
Oh, wonderful! I'm signing up
to take Yiddish lessons.
Yiddish was always something my great grandparents used to tell something in quiet, in secret.
Yeah.
So the other family wouldn't know what
we all have
about.
To. We all have that same story when they didn't want us to know something.
Yep. Well, now I'd have German. Now I'd have German, so I'd be able to get the crypto talk. But, yeah, without the German, Yiddish is very difficult.
By the way, if you have the opportunity, do you know about the Yiddish version of Fiddler on the Roof?
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard about that? That it's I think it probably just started. It's off Broadway. They're doing Fiddler on the Roof
off Broadway.
In Yiddish.
Yes, I've seen it advert. Yeah.
And
wonderful.
When
it's played? Yeah.
I think it's starting. But I have to tell
it's
I saw
this weekend.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw
That's
it when
Joel
it was
Gray
at
production.
The Museum of Jewish Heritage. And
right,
I was
right.
floored. For
wow.
me, I mean, as a somebody from show business, not just piano, whatever.
Yep.
I thought it was the best version of Fiddler on the Roof that I have ever seen.
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine that. Adding a lot of depth. Absolutely.
And so I'm just putting it out if you get a chance.
Wonderful.
And you don't
I'll
even
look
have
out
to
for it. Yeah.
You don't have to know Yiddish. They have it subtitled
right.
up there. You know?
Yeah. And, of course, we know the plot of Fiddler on the Roof so well.
Who doesn't know? It's like they sing the song, and I'm going, I don't have to look to see what it means.
Exactly.
But it's just the way that they did that.
Right.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this thing that you're doing, so we have, tonight, and we have Sunday at 3 p.m., you said?
Let me just double check that to make sure I'm right on the mark here. Yes, it is 3 p.m. At the Kupferberg Center for the Arts. Yeah, Lefrak Hall.
Okay, do you need a ticket for this one or?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I know there
was. It's a, yeah.
Okay.
I'm very happy to offer two complimentary tickets to your audience. Anybody who responds or writes to you, I don't know how people get in touch with you. I'm very happy the first two people to receive tickets.
What I'm going to do is after the show, I put this up on my Facebook page I copy the because this is not going to be podcast. So this will be forever in my...
No, it will be recorded, but it... Yeah, it won't be podcast, not the actual concert.
Oh, that will be... Okay, no, but I'm saying the show we're doing now, I mean, we're going live and it'll be...
Oh, I see. I saw.
And
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So what will happen is that,
gotcha. You
know, whether anybody's listening now, it doesn't matter. It'll go up there and...
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
And people will...
And
what I'll do on the Facebook page is prior, you know, when I put it up there, I'll comment.
Yep.
That, you know, anybody... How would they go about getting the tickets?
I just need the names. The names of two tickets. So either one person, two tickets, or a single. If somebody wants a single, then we can open the opportunity for someone else as well. So I just need two names or one name, and we'll have an envelope ready with their name at the to pick up on the day of the concert.
Oh, okay, that'll be fabulous. Well, I'm not sure. I have something I have to do in the evening, so I have to see if I could handle coming in the afternoon. My problem, and it won't be the piano, by the way. I have a problem with classical music. It soothes me and makes me fall asleep.
Oh, no.
I keep trying. It's like, this is great. Sometimes I could stay awake. I guess it depends on the, the tone or how fast or how slow or something.
Sure.
But Lefrak,
sure,
I don't
sure,
think of.
Right.
I usually like, I nod out at Colden Center a lot. Because it's so big and then, you know, and the lights are dim and it's like the perfect time for me to take a nap. Lulling me to sleep. Yeah. But if I go,
there's a story
I will concentrate.
There's a story about a famous music critic in Poland. I don't know if he's still around, but back when I used to perform a lot in Poland about 20 years ago, he was notorious because he would fall asleep on every performance and then start writing when people start clapping. So, oftentimes in the review, we'd always hear about the last cadence, you know, the last ending of a piece, but we'd have no idea how the piece of music started. So, but, you know, actually in this Karl Rathaus, there's a cadenza, and a cadenza is simply a fancy word for a musical improvisation that the pianist plays solo during a piano concerto, being a work for piano and orchestra. So at the very end of the piano concerto that I'll be playing on Sunday, there's this cataclysmic piano cadenza, and it just goes all throughout the keyboard from you know, the low end, the bass, all the way up to the treble.
Right.
And it's just fortissimo, three Fs, very large sound, trills. It sounds like a big earthquake. So if that doesn't wake you up, then then there's no hope.
Okay, I'll remember that.
As part of the Karl Rathaus Festival, there's the event tonight, but I do also want to mention at 12:15 on Saturday, at the Film Forum, which is on 209 West Houston Street. We're doing a screening of a movie from 1936 called Broken Blossoms. And that has music, very dark music, written by Carl Rathaus. And I'll be actually introducing Carl Rathaus's film music there. So that might be something, you know, for the non-classical crowd, it might be very interesting.
Right. Okay. Well, hopefully I have to see. I have a very busy weekend. I'm not used to doing two things in one day, which I already have to do tomorrow, two things, you know. But if I can, I will make it there.
Wonderful to have you. Good.
And I'm very happy to have it. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think I've covered. Those are the three big events this week. Something for everyone. There's chamber music, the film music, and then the big concerto.
Okay, that's
yeah,
just great.
Yeah, I can send you a link to all the details.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be absolutely fabulous to do. All right. Well, I appreciate
great.
Your calling in.
Thank you.
And
it's a pleasure.
Now I'm gonna have breakfast.
Since
you had yours.
Oh yes. No, I can't go without it. I have to run to my next rehearsal now.
Okay. Well,
so,
have a great day.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be
thank
in touch.
You. Likewise. Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Goodbye. That was absolutely fabulous. As I said, I don't know if I can if I can make it. That's going to be rough. So I'm going to end the show. And the cats are sleeping. Yeah, what can they do? I'm going to end the show now. And so everybody, you're listening, have a great day, afternoon, evening, or whenever you decide to listen to this. We go.